Andrew Young, thank you so much for coming on the 15-Minute Founder. If you couldn't tell already, we're going to learn everything about you in 15 minutes, which means we're going to dive right in. The first thing I want to ask you, I've heard you are the Gatsby of Silicon Alley. I don't know if you self-call yourself that, but I love that moniker or name. And you throw some of tech's hottest parties. I want to go back to the origin story. I heard everything started as a pandemic era park meetup. And now it seems like you have this event empire. Take me back to day one. How did this start and how did it end up where it is today?
So a little bit about my background. I've lived in 5 different countries and I've moved around a lot. And every time you move, you have to sort of uproot your life and build a new community. So when I moved to New York City, I moved to the States 3 years ago, August 2020, it was the middle of COVID. All the bars, restaurants, clubs, at that time I loved clubbing, all that stuff was closed down. If you remember the mass exodus, New York City, because of the, it was a hotbed of COVID, everyone had left. And so I moved here not really knowing anybody. And I took it upon myself to meet people on like all these online forums, Reddit, Twitter, Fishbowl, Blind, LinkedIn, literally every online sort of channel you can think of. And I would DM people and be like, hey, do you want to just grab coffee with me? And over time, I met more and more people. I started bringing them together, I started creating these small meetups. And what started off as 8-person coffee meetups turned into 20-person dinners, turned into happy hours that were like 50 to 100 people, and slowly grew into like thousands of people. And I just kept that consistency of bringing people together and creating really good environments where people were, the group was curated and everyone was sort of kind and nice and ambitious and that kind of thing. I also worked with a lot of hospitality groups and bars and clubs and restaurants. I had all the leverage in the world because they had no business. I'm about to shut down, so I sort of partnered with them to bring people into their venues. And started off as sort of like parties, meetups, mixers, dinners. I pivoted into sort of conferences because a lot of like tech CEOs started coming, and that's what it is today. Parties, dinners, conferences, maybe retreats one day or summits. That's the founding story.
I have to ask, is it true that you've never made a cent off your parties or conferences or events? Whether or not that is the case, now I need to ask, let's geek out on the business model / how this even works.
Yeah.
You show up to an event, amazing events, but what's happening behind the scenes? How do you make an event happen? And then there's money involved, right? How does it actually come to production?
So when I moved here 3 years ago, I worked for Facebook and they had sponsored my visa. I'm from Hong Kong. I have a Canadian passport. So they sponsored my visa to come here. And that actually was always the dream. I always wanted to live in New York City. Facebook made it happen. And then I moved over to Google after, because I was actually facing visa issues with Facebook. They wouldn't sponsor my green card. And the thing about the visa, and you probably know this very well, is I can only make money from Google. My income can only come from Google. I can't take on a side gig. I can't even work as a waiter or anything like that. So I couldn't make any income from these events. That was true until November 30th when I got my O-1 visa. And so now the business is profitable. I'm making money from the events. But that was, that only happened in the last 3 months. So for about three years, I didn't make a single dime. I never sold tickets. I had sponsors, but the sponsors didn't pay me. They just sort of paid the venue. So that's what it looked like.
Can you talk a bit about how you actually monetize here? Something that comes to mind is sponsorships, for example, or you could charge for events. What is your strategy or approach here to encouraging people to come, but also running a business and putting on high caliber events?
Yeah, so I've done over 100 events. I've only charged once for a gala, because galas are incredibly expensive. I think that gala was over like 50 grand for a couple hundred people. So I had to charge tickets, but the whole model is it's sponsorship driven. I see, my role in the company as someone who needs to bring people into the room and then sort of like sell the attention of those folks to the brands that want to sponsor them. So for example, I have a lot of founders coming to these events, anywhere from pre-seed to like unicorn status. And founders spend a lot of money on a variety of services, banking, law firms, PEOs, recruiting, PR. And all these companies are trying to target these founders. And it's actually really hard to, you could do LinkedIn marketing, you could do outbound sales, but you can't like run like Instagram ads. It's really hard to, or you can't run like Facebook ads. And so they just need a direct channel. And in this case, like a room full of founders, vetted founders that have raised X amount of money, that's perfect for them. And so that's the entire business model. I put their logo, I put their brand, I put their reps in front of these founders. And they get to reach them directly.
You seem and sound very passionate about what you're building and ambitious as well from what I've seen in terms of the evolution. Typically, there are 4 things that drive someone at any moment in time: money, power, pleasure, or fame. For the Andrew of today, which of those 4 forces is the main driving factor?
I saw this framework and I loved it. Mine's fame. It's not fame in the sense of I want to be famous, I want to be like a rock star or anything like that. I like to think I keep like somewhat low profile, like my Twitter is like, it's not even my face on it. And I don't show up to a lot of events. I'm not like making a big speech in the beginning of every event. I like the idea of being able to influence people and help them improve their lives and improve their careers. And that's why I write a blog for about 32,000 people. I like sort of achieving really hard things like immigrating to a country and building your own business and quitting your 9-to-5 and helping others do the same, because I think it'll improve their lives. So that's why I like fame. It's the idea of being able to inspire and motivate, you know, right now thousands of people, but hopefully in some point in the future, millions of people.
My hunch is that this started somewhere. There was a seed that was planted maybe earlier in your childhood. I saw this awesome quote from your dad where he said, build something for yourself, always think bigger. And for the math geeks out there, I'm a math geek. In order for you or me to be here today, if you take our parents and then our parents' parents and go back 12 generations, that's 4,096 people, or 2 to the 12th power. There's an army of people, over 4,000 people, who have made sacrifices and done many things to allow us to get to where we are today. Take me back to that piece of advice, or baby Andrew. What inspired you then, and do you think maybe led you to where you are today?
That is more so my dad being a bit of a hard ass. I remember when I got my first job out of school, graduating, I told my dad about my dream job, which was to work as a brand manager at P&G. Those are like the really hot jobs. It was consulting or like brand manager. And I was like, Dad, I really want this job. And he's like, people don't dream to work at P&G. And I was like, damn, that actually was my dream. And then I didn't get that job. I got another job. And then next I got into Facebook. And from getting to Facebook at the time was like, it was tough. There were a lot of interviews and a lot of things I had to pass. And my dad was like, okay, what's next? It's one of the coolest companies in the world to work for, but he was like, what's next? And then I got into Google, and he's like, and that's like every Asian parent's dream, for their kid to work for Google. And he's like, all right, what are you gonna do next? And I was like, you know, I'm gonna quit Google. And that freaked my parents out a little bit, but that was more so maybe like a little bit of a chip in my shoulder where it's like, you have to do bigger and bigger things. But that also relates to the earlier point of, I find it very interesting to be able to solve hard problems for myself and then pave the way for others. And right now that is people who are not fulfilled with their tech jobs, or, you know, early entrepreneurs who are looking to build something, or immigrants in this country who are looking to build a great life for themselves. So all those things resonate with me right now. And I'm inspired to help those people.
You mentioned earlier that it had always been your dream to move to New York City. Why is that the case?
Just growing up, I spent 18 years in various parts of China. And all the media I watched, like all the TV shows, all the movies, all that just pointed to New York. And it's like, New York is the most exciting place in the world to be. It's the center of the world. And I was like, I have to be there. Like, for my life to be complete, I have to live in New York City. And so like the happiest moment of my life was actually when I got that job offer for Facebook. And I was like, this is literally my dream come true. I think I teared up. That's it. It's like a childhood obsession, childhood dream.
You are surrounded by founders, business owners across the spectrum, creators, people who are looking to network, maybe people who just moved to New York. And I'm sure you've seen lots of people trying different things, different chips on their shoulders, operating in different ways. Through that, through your business, through those experiences, what's an important truth or something you believe that many others might disagree with you upon?
So before I moved to America, a fellow Canadian, so I'm Cantonese, but I have a Canadian passport. So a fellow Canadian gave me a piece of advice. And when I came here, I observed and I realized that was true. He was like, you know, you're successful right now in Canada. You're doing a good job. But in order to succeed in the US as an operator, as someone who works in a corporate environment, you need to have strong opinions and perspectives on everything. And he's like, even if you don't, try to formulate an opinion as quickly as you can and be loud. Be loud and be bold. And I was like, that's kind of weird. I don't really have an opinion on many things. And so I get here and, you know, I'm joining all these meetings at Facebook and Google. I'm like, that's true. Everyone does have an opinion. And, you know, this is true for even outside Facebook, but they have an opinion, but it might not be the most informed opinion. And so what I believe is that not everybody needs an opinion. In fact, most people shouldn't have an opinion unless you can articulate both sides, or ideally you can articulate the opposing side of your opinion better than the person that's informing you that perspective. It's a very American thing. And I say this sort of as an outsider, everyone just is strongly opinionated. So it's okay to be neutral and not have a strong belief in many things.
Resonates with me. When I was in business school / shadowing some business school classes, professors would sometimes ask who agrees with this or who doesn't agree. The easiest way to get picked is just take the contrarian take. And even if you don't truly agree with it, raise your hand, then you're going to get time to speak there. So having opinions, I think, or like I like to think, strong opinions loosely held. And I love what you said around being so well-versed or educated, you can speak to both sides of that argument. Next, I want to read you a headline, and I want you to tell me one if the headline is true and if you agree with the headline. Andrew Young, he throws hundreds of tech parties. He loves the nightlife scene, but he doesn't drink alcohol. One, is that true? and do you drink alcohol, and how do you manage your life being at nightlife scenes or having your career kind of revolve around these events and conferences too?
I've been sober for a year, like almost exactly a year. So I used to be a heavy drinker. It started in Shanghai when people started going out to clubs at 14 because they didn't ID. In America, they go to house parties and play sports and stuff. We just went to clubs in Shanghai and people would smoke cigarettes at 14. So I started drinking, like binge drinking at an early age. And I wasn't even drinking regular alcohol. It was like fake alcohol. It's kind of gross. And I used to love it. And I was doing like 15, 20 drinks a week up until like a year ago. Loved getting hammered, going to the clubs. But then I realized I was just wasting my life. And I had these goals. One of the goals was to quit my job and build a life for myself that I could be independent of a company like Google and like remain the ability to stay in this country without an employer that had to sponsor me. That was like one of the dreams, you know, one of the goals. And I was like, I'm never going to get there if I just kept getting hammered every weekend because my weekends are gone and some of my weeknights are gone. And I was getting a ton of anxiety from drinking too, the hangovers. So I put a stake in the ground after South by Southwest where I threw a party for 2,000 people and I got very drunk. I was like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just like drinking my life away and actively surrounded myself with non-drinkers. And to this day, I have this group of entrepreneurs who are in a group chat. Most of us don't drink. One of my friends, Elizabeth Gascoigne, runs like a non-alcoholic party company. And I just spent a lot of time with her and she influenced me as well. So it was a very active decision to just want to be more productive.
Another intake or supplement question related to that. You have, it seems like, a pretty busy, packed schedule. Do you drink caffeine or take any other supplements to help you manage that schedule and build this life for yourself?
No caffeine, no supplements. I take vitamin D3 during the winters. But other than that, no caffeine unless I really need it. If I have less than 5 hours of sleep, then I'll do some caffeine.
What does a typical day in the life of Andrew look like? When do you go to sleep? When do you wake up? What do you do in terms of meals during the day? And then maybe what does the ideal day look like if you can't hit that every day?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out. So I'm 3 months into like my entrepreneurship journey and I've been on the road 2 to 3 weeks a month. I just got back from Hawaii and then next week, you know, I'm going to Toronto and Miami and then Seattle and then San Francisco and then LA. So it's like a lot of travel just because of the events. So I don't really have a regular routine. I'd say I'm probably up by 7:30 a.m. I'm in bed by 12, work out in the morning. And then I have 4 days a week where I don't take meetings. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm still working the weekends. I'm trying to get it down to 6 days a week, but I'm working the weekends. Ideal would be I'm up by 6 a.m. I'm in bed by 10 p.m. Just hard when you have events most nights that go until 10 p.m.
I have to ask here, some people might hear work weekends or trying to get down to 6 and think, wait, why are you doing that? / you don't take meetings Tuesday and Thursday. Can you break down both aspects for me? Why did you decide to block those two days for no meetings? And then why do you work weekends too?
Yeah. So the initial thinking is like, I'm only going to work 5 days a week like a normal person. And two of those days, I don't take any meetings and I just focus on my own thing. Ends up being it's more work than I thought. So the Saturday and Sundays are just filler, you know, what's the word? Spillover days where I just have to catch up on the work I didn't complete. So I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to figure out the routine and the travel and honestly, whether it even makes sense to have an apartment in New York City because I'm on the road all the time. I was thinking about staying in a hotel full time. I need to figure it out.
You're at a lot of events. You mentioned there's more travel picking up. As cheesy as it might sound, this might sound cringe. Your network is your net worth. One, do you agree with that? And then two, let's get tactical here. What is the best networking advice you have for someone going to these events? How do you actually make the most out of events? Because oftentimes something I hear is, oh, I don't want to go to an event. I'll just be standing around. It's not worth my time. What do the best networkers actually do to make going to one of your events worth it?
So I'll start with the first one. Your network is your net worth. So I think there's two parts to everything you do in your career. And then I think this applies to like building companies as well. But one, first stage is like, you have to do good work. You have to build a product. You have to do something special. And the second part is you tell people about it. And that's like in a company sense, it's the go-to-market, it's promotion. You know, in a personal career sense, it's networking. It's like telling people what you do and how you can solve their problem. So completely agree. Like that, you know, the networking is sort of half the battle. If some people believe that you can put your heads down and just build amazing things and the product will speak for itself. And while that's true for very small percentage of people who are just brilliant, most people will need a channel to sort of get their, you know, get themselves out there or get their product out there. The best networking advice I can think of, and I write a lot about this stuff, but if you're going to go to an event, most people think like you go to the event and that's it. You know, it's a 2-hour event. You just spend 2 hours there, you leave and that's it. But in reality, a lot of the work happens before the event and a lot of the magic and the impact happens after the event. And what I mean is before the event, you know, you could put in the work to identify who's there. You can pre-connect with people before the event. I used to do this thing where I'd host smaller meetups before the large event to know a smaller group of people. You can do all the sorts of tactics. Jason Calacanis had this idea or had this concept called lobby surfing, where he wouldn't necessarily he wouldn't necessarily like buy tickets to a conference. He would just like chill in the lobby, and he would get like the, you know, he would get the benefit of being at the conference. And then after the event, you know, you can, you got to follow up. You got to follow up with every, you know, the people you want to meet. And that's how you actually reap the benefits of being at the event.
I'm personally curious about this. You probably meet tons of people. I'm even thinking if I go to an event and let's say I want to take that advice and make it actionable, how do you personally keep track of your network? And hey, I haven't talked to this person in a while, or this person I want to keep in touch with or build a relationship with, or hey, maybe they can be a mentor in the future. Do you have a strategy or playbook for that?
I don't. I'm really bad at that stuff. Actually, I guess my philosophy is one, tactically, I have a Google Sheet. I probably track, you know, half the people I meet on it. It's too much work to do anymore, even with the help of my assistant. And then two is, if you're building like a community business or an events business, or even as a creator or like influencer, the way you maintain your network with others is through your product or through your content. So I think of it as, if I create really awesome events, my relationship with most of the people that know me is through that product, through the event. I don't know if that's going to be, you know, successful or not, but that's what I'm trying right now.
To wrap up, I have a couple rapid fire questions that I want to run through. The first is, I believe that at different stages in our life, we have these earthquake type moments where before this thing happened, life just wasn't the same as after it happened. Has there been a book or a movie which has been an earthquake moment where after you watched the movie or read the book, just life wasn't the same? And what was the book or movie?
Maybe the 4-hour work week, Tim Ferriss. I was just so stuck in like my 9-to-5. I didn't know what outsourcing was and all these other hacks. And I think Tim Ferriss just opened up my mind to, there is a world of possibility in like building a life for yourself and making money outside just working a job.
Let's say you could have a billboard on the busiest highway in the world or on multiple highways, and that billboard can have one message. What would that message say to an aspiring entrepreneur out there who wants to break away from the 9-to-5 and take the plunge, but is just hesitant or on the edge?
I have a message, but it might not be specifically for that use case. So are you familiar with memento mori?
Somewhat.
It's a Latin phrase, remember you must die. And it's less of like seize the day. It's more like you could die at any moment. So anything you're doing right now, whether you're like you're doing some work or you're at an event, having dinner with, you know, with your partner, just enjoy that moment. It could be very last. And I have a lot of moments where I'm doing things I don't want to do, especially in the events world, like heavy logistics and coordination. And I'm like, this could be my last moment. So I'm going to put all the energy and all my presence in this very moment and enjoy as much as I can. And I think given most entrepreneurs are just like constantly anxious, just try to enjoy the journey a little bit, because that's the whole point of it.
I love that. Do you have any tips to remind yourself of that? Because saying that right now, you know, this morning I might have been doing something where I'm thinking, crap, this sucks, but then that could be the last time ever. Do you have tips or tactics to actually remind yourself of that frequently?
I remind myself why I started and why I got here. So whenever I get really stressed, and this is, you mentioned corny. This is really corny. I just remind myself I'm in New York City, because that was my dream. And so anything I'm doing right now was honestly, it used to be a dream. My dream was to quit my job. Well, first of all, my dream was to live in the city. And so this, I'm living my dream. I could be cleaning the streets and I'd be living my dream. And the second of all, when work gets tough and I'm like, I'm working 7 days a week, I remind myself like this was the dream. The dream, I worked super hard to quit my job to build this thing out. And even saying it right now, I feel like, damn, this is cool. Even this is dope, you know?
I love that. Last question I want to ask you is, let's fast forward. What does this look like in 10 years? I believe I read somewhere you want to build the Disneyland of events. Let's get ambitious here. I want to hear the master plan, where you think this heads. But if we were to be chatting right here in 10 years, where is this going to? What does the future look like for you?
So I've always been fascinated by hospitality, restaurants, hotels. One of my partners right now is a hotel that I love working with. Hotels, theme parks, general hospitality experiences, which is one of the reasons I got started. And I love to sort of designing these rooms where people get to be in and influencing the way they engage with other people, but also the other elements in the room. I want to build really unique and fun experiences that bring in the most ambitious and extraordinary people. And I believe, and that takes in the form of like, you know, entertainment and hospitality and all those elements. And I think once you do, my entire business model is, I just have to figure out how to capture the attention of these brilliant entrepreneurs and redirect that attention to my partners and my clients. That's all I have to do. The bar for events is really low. Most people host happy hours, and I started with happy hours, and I'm slowly elevating. But things like South by Southwest and all these summits and conferences, I just came back from the lobby conference. It's incredible. I want to build the next version of that. Eventually build sort of a media arm that complements it, which is, now you have all these ambitious people coming in. How do I tell their stories and enable them with my distribution? And then lastly, how do I invest in these folks and have some skin in the game in what they're building, so that in 10, 20 years, I can get some sort of, you know, return. So what I think what it looks like is an events company, a media arm, and then like some sort of like investing entity, whether that's a fund or, you know, a syndicate or something.
Amazing. Well, 10 years from now, I hope to look back and see what you built there. Sounds like it's on the way to getting there.
Well, we'll do this again in 10 years.
Love it. Thank you so much, Andrew. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.